This is Chef John Foles welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and inviting you to join us at the kitchen table for another hour of adventures in food. Each week we travel from the back roads of Louisiana to the streets of Europe's capitals, delving into food. We'll talk with chefs, food historians, authors, and producers. We'll search out current trends, revive forgotten traditions, and naturally, we're going to talk a little food with you. Hey, y'all, it's that time of year when my soft side shows. My soft shell crab side, that is. Join me, Chef John Foles, seafood expert and restaurateur Frank Randall, as we talk soft shell crabs on Stirring It Up next. But first, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. Israel's Security Cabinet has approved an extension of the 12-hour humanitarian ceasefire today. It says the 24-hour extension will now be in effect until midnight Sunday, local time. But Hamas spokesman says in a statement that any humanitarian ceasefire that does not include a withdrawal of Israeli soldiers from inside Gaza and that allows Palestinians to evacuate their injured is unacceptable. Israel's Security Cabinet made that decision at the request of the U.S. and the cabinet meets tomorrow to discuss a sustained ceasefire. Israel says within this 24-hour ceasefire, it will act against any breach. A Gaza health official says the Palestinian death toll rose to more than 1,000 as an additional 132 bodies were pulled from the rubble during the earlier ceasefire. 40 Israeli soldiers and 3 civilians have been killed. Dutch officials in eastern Ukraine are still working in a recovery mode, even though all of the bodies of the Dutch victims from the Malaysia airline crash have arrived back in the Netherlands. The BBC's Tom Berridge reports from the city of Kharkiv an official investigation of the crash site has not yet begun.
There are 40 unarmed Dutch military police officers currently in the city of Kharkiv, but hundreds more police and personnel from the Netherlands and other countries are expected to arrive here over the coming days. For now, this international operation is only making preparations for the next phase of their mission, and they'll not move in large numbers to the crash site in rebel-controlled territory for several days. First, they want the approval of Ukraine's parliament, which they say will vote on the matter on Thursday. If they get the green light, Dutch police say they will then focus only on recovering any other remains or belongings of the victims on board flight MH17.
The BBC's Tom Berridge reporting from Ukraine. Lawyers will argue the constitutionality of gay marriage bans in Wisconsin and Indiana next month. As Marty Mickelson reports from member station WUWM, a federal appeals court set a date Friday.
The 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals announced it has rescheduled oral arguments for both states' appeals for August 26th. Federal judges in Wisconsin and Indiana overturned each state's gay marriage ban in separate rulings. When both states appealed, the court combined the cases. The 7th Circuit also denied requests that the state's appeals be heard before the full 10-member court instead of a 3-judge panel, as is customary. Hundreds of same-sex couples were married in Wisconsin and Indiana after the bans were overturned and before stays were issued. For NPR News, I'm Marty Mickelson in Milwaukee.
In Northern California, a wildfire is prompting evacuations of homes along a rural road east of Sacramento. Fire officials say at least 2 buildings were destroyed. The fire's covering around 1,300 acres. This is NPR News. In Iraq, gunmen have detained the head of Baghdad's provincial council for a day. And NPR's Alice Fordham reports it's not clear whether he was arrested by security forces or kidnapped by militias.
The politician, Riyad al-Adar, was taken from his house along with 8 bodyguards by men in uniform. He was returned less than 24 hours later. Adar lives in a heavily Sunni area and is Sunni. District council official Mahmoud al-Obeidi says no one knows who detained Adar. As sectarian tension has soared in Iraq, people in Sunni areas complain that Shiite militias patrol the streets and arrest people. It is often not possible to tell who is with the militia and who's with the security forces. The council leader was freed after a senior Sunni politician held a meeting with Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, a Shiite who has encouraged militias to work alongside the security forces. Alice Fordham, NPR News.
Police in Pennsylvania are still looking for 2 men who allegedly carjacked an SUV, then ran it into a crowd in Philadelphia, killing 3 children who were selling fruit for their church. Their mother is in critical condition. 2 others were also injured. Cell phone users may soon be able to unlock their phones when switching service providers. That means you can change your provider, but you won't have to buy a new phone. The bill passed by Congress and on the president's desk reverses a 2012 Library of Congress ruling, making it a copyright violation to unlock a phone without permission. But the library plans to revisit that law next year. Sit-down strikes and occupying restaurants are on the agenda of more than 1,000 fast food workers at their first national convention in Chicago this weekend. The workers voted to escalate the push for a $15 an hour wage. I'm Janine Herbst, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, the environment, medical research, and child well-being.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
This is Courtney Petrie from Bluegrass Highway. Join me tonight at 7:30 p.m. following Rendezvous des Cajuns for an episode of Bluegrass Highway, only on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to the kitchen table. Welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. And we're so happy to have all of you with us today. And I want to begin by saying hello to our executive producer, Michelle Yark. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And you?
I'm doing really good. Today I started out on the back hill behind the house around my fig trees.
You did?
And yeah, we're just having this unbelievable year of good figs, sweet, big, and a mystery abounds about my fig trees.
Okay, I'm listening.
Not one bird peck on one fig on my trees this season. Cannot figure it out.
I don't know if I'd be eating those figs.
They're not covered. They're not netted in. Not one fig has been pecked on that tree.
I'd be careful how you ate them.
I've been eating them every day.
I'd just be careful if the birds don't want them. I can't imagine they're sweet.
I'll tell you, it's a gift from God. Across the glass wall, of course, we have our engineer keeping us alive and well, Dean Slama. What's going on over there, Dean?
Not much. You got some miracle figs over there.
I tell you what, I think I do. I'm not kidding you when I say it's an anomaly. Fig tree owners have to fight birds all year long.
I've had to cover my fig trees.
I'm not kidding you. I did not have a single fig missing. Anyway, well, you know, Michelle, I hope you're bearing the heat pretty well here because it is absolutely incredible. It's all I can say. I mean, the heat has been so crazy, you know, but
I was hoping that you could help me through this heat because, I mean, it's starting to get to me. It's hot. I need something like pick me up, kind of keep me going, like a little gift. What you got?
I tell you what I got last night, a friend of mine. I might be able to make you smile here.
Okay.
In fact, your little gift might be right there in the cooler behind me.
Some in the refrigerator?
Right there in that refrigerator, yeah. You know, somebody came by last night and dropped off a few soft shell crabs.
Oh! Now we're talking, Slama.
I love soft shell crab, and I got a good friend of mine who always thinks about me when those big busters are in. And
let me guess, this is your favorite season. I bet this is his favorite season, Slama.
No, soft shell crab season.
Soft shell crabs. Am I right?
Yeah. It's my favorite season of the year. But, you know, every season, as we always talk about in the year, is surrounded by food in Louisiana. And it just so happened that we've creeped into another season that makes me smile. The best of all, soft shell crab. And they're molting right now. And you got to grab them right when those new shells start, right before the new shells start to harden. And I tell you, best way to eat a crab other than boiled or crab stew or crab in gumbo is a soft shell.
Or lump crab meat on a salad or crab meat stuffed filet.
A couple other little things.
Yeah, you know, all those are, you know, have a soft spot in my heart. I don't want to discount those, but lightly battered, fried soft shell crab. I mean, I just don't think you can beat that. Of course, I think I'm going to leave the cooking up to the experts and just eat,
As usual.
Same with catching. Yeah. I mean, I have caught crabs before in my life, like for you to know that. I've never caught soft shells. But, you know, I had my own little supply of chicken necks and string for those big kitchens out in the Gulf.
Slama, I think she just heard me talk about how I used to catch crabs at Grand Isle with a string and a chicken neck. Now all of a sudden she's assumed that role of the crab catcher.
Taking notes. Learn from the big man.
I even did a speech in eighth grade about how to catch crabs.
Yeah, I bet so.
I did. How to go crabbing in the Gulf.
Well, I mean, that sounds that sounds interesting, but there's a little more of a science to getting soft shell crab than just chicken neck in the water, although that does work, I'm going to tell you right now. It involves timing, patience, expert, a knowing eye, all things you're not familiar with.
What are you talking about? I got patience? What do you mean?
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the anatomy of a crab in a little bit, but for now, suffice it to say that the hard outer shell of the crab grows in stages, but the growth of the internal tissue is continuous. It never ends. Eventually, that crab is going to grow out of its shell and will need to form a new one. And of course, this is called the molting process. And molting is the term used more often, if you're talking about birds or something like that, molting, losing their feathers. With insects or crustaceans, they also molt. But a crab is preparing to start this process. You can see it pretty quickly if you have a good trained eye. It begins to form a new soft shell underneath the existing hard shell. Then it goes through various stages until that hard shell is released and the new crab emerges from that and begins to grow that new hard shell outside in open air, you know?
Well, it's really fascinating. The stage right before molting, that's called the peeler stage.
Of course.
And that's when the hard shell starts to detach, okay, from all the tissue underneath. The crab actually releases enzymes that will dissolve the outer shell parts, and some are reabsorbed and stored internally. Once that inner soft shell is formed underneath, the crab is ready to completely lose the outside hard shell. That's when it's time to run and hide. Not for us. Time for us to run and get the pot, but for the poor little crab, it's time for him to try to protect himself.
Because during that molting process, they're very vulnerable to predators, and not only including the two-legged kind. They also, crabs themselves love soft-shell crabs, so they got to go hide from their brothers and sisters, too. But one thing about it, all of us experienced fishermen, we know all the signs, because there are signs that indicate when a crab is ready to lose its shell. That's right.
Like what?
Well, first of all, areas on the crab's claws will take on, certain colors. It's called red lining, so to speak, at various times during the pre-molt stage. And depending on these colorations, a good fisherman, or especially the crabbers, can pinpoint when a crab will molt within a few hours. Then they'll grab that crab and place it in what they're going to call a shedding tank, which is a tank and this normally takes place on the side of like the water. There's seashore cabins where some of these crabbers will do this work because it's easy access to the water. Crabs in this stage will stop eating and will absorb a lot of water rapidly, causing the tissues to swell and split that old shell right off. And that's why they call them busters. My old uncle used to say, y'all come over on Sunday, we're going to have some busters. And everybody
knew
that.
I thought maybe that was a smaller kind
No, it means the crab is busting.
So all soft shells are busters.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I gotcha. Well, it sounds like if you've ever seen this whole thing in action, it almost sounds like a scene from The Incredible Hulk, right?
Yeah, something like it, pretty much.
The entire shell, the claws and all, give way. The new body emerges out of the old shell. And then the crab starts to pump water into its tissues to inflate the new shell.
Yeah, it just backs right out of it. It's amazing to see the old shell being pushed away and they sliding their claws out of the old hard claws.
I mean,
pretty incredible.
The new shell is going to be about a third larger than the old shell. Mm-hmm. So then they have to kind of grow into that. But nature is amazing. And, you know, though the female crabs, those that aren't mature yet, the sallies, they call them sallies. Did you know that?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They give off additional signs when they're molting. Their underside apron will be a dark purple color, which is the new shell underneath showing through. And at this stage, that apron is a triangle shape. Once the new shell breaks through, the apron becomes a rounded U shape. And this indicates that the female crab is fully mature, and then she's got a new name.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Sook.
Sook, yep.
Mm-hmm. She becomes from a Sally to a Sook, and now she can have babies.
That's now she can have little crab eggs, which are good, too. But she crab soup, nothing better than the eggs of a female crab going into the soup. I can tell you all about that.
Okay.
It takes about 4 days after that point that Michelle was talking about for the new crab to completely harden. The bottom will turn this magnificent white porcelain color, which tells everybody that this is a brand new hard shell crab. And that's important to know because that means the crab is at its fullest of meat, because that's when it molts, when it's so packed and so mm-hmm. fat. So when you see that just shining white bottom, you know that crab is just full of meat. One of the things that I used to love the most, so I had an uncle and aunt, my dad's sister, who lived on Manchac Bay.
Ooh.
And we used to go down to Rugon. Remember I showed you the song with Rugon? Daddy used to trap in Rugon. He was a trapper when I was a little baby. And his best friend married my dad's sister, and they built a home on stilts, raised about 8 kids, over the waters of Manchac over there, Lake Pontchartrain. And, of course, he tended oil wells on the water there, but I think he spent most of his time, since the oil wells really didn't need much tending and they were just gas wells, he had to just go check them every now and then. He set out those crab traps.
Mm-hmm.
And he became an expert at shedding crabs, soft shells. And so he would call Daddy up and say, Roy, you have to come. You have to come. I got a whole bunch of busters over here for Sunday. You come. So we'd all pile up in Daddy's old Chevrolet. You know, so there had about 8 of us in there, plus Daddy was 9. And we'd head on off from St. James Parish. We'd have to cross the Lutcher Ferry. There was no interstate in those days, you know. This was a journey. Then we had to get on airline US 61, and we had to head on out toward Laplace. And then we had to take the back road off of Laplace, old two-lane highway, all the way to Ponchatoula. And in the middle of that, you crossed over. You know where Mittendorf's is?
Mm-hmm.
Right at Mittendorf's restaurant, right there between Laplace and Ponchatoula. That's where they lived, right there, right on the waters of Manchac. And we would go there on a Sunday. And two things I remember all of my life, they always had ice-cold watermelon in a wheelbarrow. Now imagine 8 kids piling out of a 1946 Chevy.
And they had 8.
They had 8. So here's 16 kids, and both families had twins. So there was 4 lookalikes in the bunch. And then you'd walk out onto a pier because their house was on stilts, so you had to walk over the pier, which was extremely dangerous for some of us, you know, because we were adventurous, so to speak.
How many of you fell off the pier?
Often quite a few, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then we would get to this little piece of highland that before you got to the camp, the house on stilts, which we loved. Of course, that was very adventurous.
Right? That was very exciting.
Oh, yeah, we had a lot to see. And the first thing you saw when you hit land was a wheelbarrow full of watermelons with crushed ice on top of it. And you knew you were in heaven for 6-7-year-olds, right, on a hot summer day. And then you'd go into this gigantic screen back porch on Lake Manchac, and there it was. Big old frying pan out there. He used to have a cook stove outside with this big screen porch looking over the water. And there was all these soft-shell crabs cleaned and ready to go fish frying. And I'll never forget, he would cut his own potatoes and make fresh french fries out of them. I'm going to tell you what, we had never heard of Disneyland.
Yet.
But y'all, I'm going to tell you what, a Sunday in Manchac with ice cold watermelon and Buster crabs, ain't nothing like it, in a memory I'll never forget.
Time to get down, cause I'm moving up. Check out the crabs in the bucket.
Like flies on a windscreen, riding on walls. Square biz clones claim they're having a ball. KRVS underwriting announcements reach listeners with your message of support and information about your business or event. To find out more about partnering with South Louisiana's Regional Public Radio Program Source, call us at 482-5787. 482-KRVS.
Our music on the Thistle and Shamrock transcends boundaries, expands horizons, celebrates tradition, stimulates innovation. It's music to bring people together, so why don't you join us?
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
Stamp to enter the world of jazz. I'm DeJama Gagne, the host of Passport to Modern Jazz. Tuesdays at 10 p.m., I'm going to walk you through the gate and into the world of current jazz, back to New Orleans jazz earliest recordings, and won't leave out the Hammond B3.
Just drop it down below to the briny deep. Don't forget you got to use some really stinky meat. You can use a star or one of Hooper's pet. Either way you pull it up, the same thing's what you get. Crab pot is a simple contraption. Crab pot, get some regular action. Crab pot, it's my favorite thing.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. We try to introduce folks, Michelle, the things they may never have seen or heard of in the swamplands of Louisiana. And today is no different. We're talking about the business of crab, but also at the same time, soft shell crab, because so many people misunderstand soft shell, or what is a soft shell, or how do you cook it, or how do you eat it. And today we have a great, great, great guest who's going to be joining us to talk a little bit about that. Michelle, remember when I was talking just now about going to my uncle's house for,
yes,
for those Buster crabs? I shouldn't even say this, but I was dying to remember his name. That isn't my
You see,
uncle.
This is the thing. He doesn't remember his name, but he remembers the potatoes being
sliced.
He remembers the cornmeal, the oil, the pier.
I remember
that he
could
fall off of, the big wheelbarrow of ice-cold
watermelon,
but don't remember the man's name.
Well, I remember his name was Uncle Harry McThurman. He used to trap with my dad, and so they were young boys together. They were from different parts of South Louisiana, but they met each other. They were trappers, and then he met my dad's sister, so they got married, so they were brother-in-laws, and they had 8 children. Daddy had 8 children, so 16 unmanageable kids got together at Uncle Harry's house, like with crab was in, because he was the first guy I knew to ever have a tank of red line crabs. And then he'd call up and say, "We got Busters this Sunday. Come on in."
Y'all had a phone?
No, you'd write a letter or something. I don't know. I don't know how they talked. I don't remember how they talked back then. All I remember is that he was a well tender, a gas well tender in Lake Pontchartrain for like Exxon or somebody, Texaco. And he had this big well tending boat. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you what, 16 unmanageable Cajun children ride around his boat. I think he raised crab traps more than he tended oil wells. Because he kind of was his own boss, you know what I mean? And if you allow a Cajun to be their own boss and give them a boat, they
got multiple businesses.
They got many, many businesses. Anyway, Michelle, we have a great friend, a great guest with us today who knows a heck of a lot more about crabs than we'll ever know in our lifetime. So why don't you introduce him?
Yes, indeed. We have Frank Randall with us today of Randall's Cajun Restaurant in Lafayette.
You remember we went there one day and it was this gigantic like airplane hangar, and he's got about 3,000 people dancing inside her. And I said, what the heck? What's going on? What's going on here? And his wife's at the door, and I mean, it's like his son.
Every day's a party at Frank's place.
Let me tell you what, every day is something at Frank's place. I can tell you that.
Well, Frank is, as you would guess, a native Louisianian. And in his own words, he says, his feet have been in the water almost since birth.
I believe that.
He got a start in business after graduating from college. He served in the Army. And that's when he started flying And you heard me right, flying, not frying, flying fresh crabs out of Louisiana up the East Coast.
You see how much smarter he was than me. You see, I'm trying to buy crabs and frying them for like $4. Mm-hmm. He's got an airplane flying them to the East Coast. You see what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That's why I like to hang around with him.
Well, these were Vermilion Bay crabs, and I want to know if there's a difference between, like, the Rugon crabs and the Vermilion Bay crabs, and we'll talk to him about that. But it was in Vermilion Bay where he and his grandfather used to fish at their summer home. He eventually set up his own crab processing plant in Henderson for the wholesale market. Then in 1979, he opened Randall's in Lafayette. Local tradition and, like you said, great food, great Cajun dance music. His processing plant is now actually located right in the same area. He also handles crawfish. And Frank and his staff were invaluable during Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. They fed rescuers, handled a lot of the restoration efforts. Frank's son is following in his footsteps and is working in the business, has been for the past 13 or so years, and that just proves that the seafood business in Louisiana is certainly generational. Frank, we're so excited to have you back on Stirring It Up. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Aye, bonjour, mes amis.
Frank, that was one heck of a good introduction for a Cajun boy, huh?
Yeah, man, I love it down here. I love what I do.
Well, yeah.
I really like being with you guys.
We miss you. I don't know, maybe John seen you. I hadn't seen you in a while.
No, I ain't seen you, but we talked. I was riding in the car one day, and I called him up, and I found out myself on Facebook.
FaceTime?
So I'm looking at my phone waiting for it to ring, and all of a sudden Frank's face comes up, and he said, "Well, hey, what are you doing?" And I'm driving with the phone in front of me, looking at his face. We're having this big conversation. And I said, "How in the heck did I get you on my phone?" I didn't, you know, I'm not technically astute, you know what I mean? So I didn't know. I thought it was some kind of great gift from the creator or something that Frank was in my phone. But I wrote from New Orleans to Donaldsonville talking to Frank, looking at his face, causing havoc on the interstate.
Yeah, I was going to say, and you were driving. That's the scary part. Frank, how's the crab catch looking so far this year?
We're off to a slow start, but we're going to gain speed. It was much like crawfish this year. We think it's weather-related. We had an extended winter, so cold waters just sort of softened it. But outlook's going to be about the same. You know, we came out all right into the crawfish season. We just finished up. So we expect the same for crab. But to answer your question, you know, the soft crabs, real temperature finicky, so they're off to a little bit of a soft start, but we expect it to pick up.
There was so much talk about the crawfish season being late because, as you said, of the winter and the crawfish couldn't come up and start to eat and grow. And you say it ended up fairly good. What does that mean? Was it comparable or was it down? Or how was crawfish?
Strong finish. The deep water came in, and actually we had the ponds were producing when the deep water was producing towards the peak of the season, which would post Holy Week. But no, we wound up getting everything done that we had to do. A lot of the plants were concerned they wouldn't be able to make their deadlines, but we got everything done. The quality was good. Prices came down, which is important for the consuming public, but wound up being good. We got everything we needed done.
You know, we're talking about soft shell crab today, but one of my favorite things was always the soft shell crawfish. And then there seemed to be some great interest in a couple of guys coming together to try to grow them, as people did with soft shell crab, and get into the business. And there seemed to be some pretty good packaging of the soft shell crawfish, which was interesting to me as a restaurateur, because I thought to have a triptych, so to speak, of soft shell, like a soft shell crawfish, soft shell crab, soft shell crawfish, kind of all on the same plate, was interesting. But then all of a sudden it seemed that the soft shell crawfish kind of fell off. Was there just no market for it, or was there a small market and some still exist? What happened with that side of the market, the soft shell crawfish?
You know, we did it, but it's very labor intense. It's not as easy. You know, one crab goes on a plate, maybe two, but it takes at least 16 to make a dish on the other, and it takes the same amount of effort to molt one crawfish as it does one crab. At the end of the day, it was labor intense, which is relates to the price. But I think it's a great product. As you and I both know, it's on the plate, it's incredible. It's fresh water as opposed to the saltwater crab, so it's different. But visual appeal was good.
Well, it was fantastic. You know, I mean, the salt we just really created, along with other chefs, of course, a phenomenon when we started to get have access to soft shell crawfish. And I remember the soft shell crawfish, we'd put four on a plate with some good real buttery lemony meunière sauce. And we put it on top of eggplant medallion that was coated and deep fried. Frank, we could not keep enough crawfish to satisfy the desire. And the same is true with the soft shell crab, because more people have access to the soft shell crab, and I think more people are looking for it. More restaurateurs are certainly answering that customer's call. So how, let's jump on soft shell crab for a minute. You're no longer shedding the crab yourself. Is that what I hear? You're pretty much marketing the crabs. I know you do so much crab business. Tell us your role in the soft shell crab.
Well, the soft shell crab, we had a closed system that was developed in conjunction with LSU, where we actually had an aquaculture project right on the grounds of Randall's. We've since removed that facility because of we needed the space. We outsourced it, but we basically went to a couple of people that were doing it our way. And, you know, that's we control the quality of that. You saw that with what we were able to give to you at Revolution.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I've told you this before, and I'll tell all of my listeners. I mean, I never saw a more beautiful soft-shell crab than came from Randall's. And I know that you personally were controlling that quality, and wherever the outsourcing was coming from, you obviously had your hand in it. The crabs are phenomenal. The crabs, the size of them were incredible, these beautiful whalers. Your packaging of those crabs were phenomenal. So everything about it made your crab just absolutely incredible and loved by our guests. So how's it going so far this year now that crab's in season, and how's the soft shell business?
Well, the soft shell crab business is good. It just, like I said, we're off to a little bit of a slow start. In the wild caught seafood business, you're subject to nature. And we know it's we're running about 30 days late. We're about 30 days off on the catch if you put it on the graph. But outlook is good. We're always optimistic, and you know, you had the key phrase there. It's love. You got to love what you do, and you have to be patient. Mm-hmm. So we know it's going to happen, and I think that's what it is.
So Frank, how does this work? I mean, you're in the crab business, so you have crab fishermen, and then do you inspect the crabs when they come in to find out which ones are about to molt? And is that when you put them in a separate shedding area, or what's that process?
No. This is done out on the water, because these crabs, when we're in a pre-molt, mm-hmm. which is when you can identify them, and you know these are actually bought at a different price by the each. You have to handle them different on the water. You bring them in, and they're basically divide out right there. Some stuff goes to the plant. The other stuff goes to the shedding trays immediately.
So, Frank, what you're saying is as the crabbers are pulling the nets or the traps up, they're able to identify those crabs that are are getting into the molting process. Explain that to us. What are they looking for? Because if they're taking them and separating them immediately so that they're ready to go to the specific people who are going to manage them through shedding and packing, what are they looking for? How do they identify that crab?
Well, there's two things. The pre-molt, normally there's a coloration, but you're really trying to get them closer to the actual time that they molt, which is, as you call it, the buster stage. The pre-molt is coloration, and you can look at the crab, and it'll have a little pinkish to red tint in the red areas. You can identify it by that. But more importantly, if you actually look at the crab, if you turn it over, you can actually see within the three-day area where it's going to molt, it'll actually start to fracture the bottom of the shell. Because that crab is so big underneath that it's full. It's 100% full, and it's just starting to puff itself up and fractures, exit that hard shell and become a soft shell before it makes a new hard shell. Mm-hmm. And that's the growth cycle of a crustacean, a crab.
How many times will a crab actually molt in its life cycle? Is there a known number?
If I had to guess, I would say at least six times. What it does, it comes from the little bitty one you see running on the oyster shells. Then it moves up, and I would say by the time it gets to about a 5-inch crab, which is the bottom end of what you harvest, 5 to 5.5 inch, it should have molted. I'm going to guess at least three times. But it when it molts, it'll grow about 50%, 1.5 times its size. It bumps itself up to exit, and it. The growth, like if it was 1 inch, it'd go to 1.5 inch. Then at 1.5 inch, it would go, you know, progressively get to where
you when you it. When you say pump itself up, it's just taking in water and expanding that soft inner shell just to explode or push that big hard shell off because it's already starting to dismantle, right?
Exactly. That's what it does. It's the hydraulics of it. And that was a unique thing when we had it next to the restaurant. People would come in and they would just... the crabs molt at night, crawfish molt during the day. So at night, starting at about 7 o'clock, people just go out into the tanks and they could watch. We were busting about, we'd molt about, a couple thousand crabs a night. Any one night, you could actually look through there and see it happening.
How long is the process? I mean, like, you've got the tank, you've got the crabs in there. So, I mean, is it like a 3-hour process or...
Well, when they start, like 3 days out, they'll start to fracture the shell. It's all water quality and water temperature. They're real delicate in that fine line, and we had a way of increasing the water flow over the crabs. The more water flow they had, it's almost like, John, it's like the moon cycle, the tides. When you get a little bit more water flowing over, they're healthier, and they actually, you can speed up the process. But it would probably take about 3 hours once they start to get through the full process, leading up about an hour, then they exit the shell, which takes it about an hour, and then you want to get it out of the system within an hour. So you got about a 3-hour window of what you watch happen.
And as soon as they're molted, then you ice them or what? Because I know I would assume the hard shell would come on fairly quickly, right? Or
it goes from there. It goes to what we call a paper shell, but the paper shell doesn't happen that quick. As soon as you get it out of the water, it stops. The calcium, the elements that it needs are in the water. So once you get it out of the water, they stop the hardening process. But you want to keep them in the water for at least an hour because you want them to get that full expansion, that new size.
Mm-hmm.
And the unique thing, you know, it still has the same amount of protein in that crab. It's roughly 1.5 times the size it was. So that's when you get what they call a paper shell crab. If you let it get hard again, we call it a skinny crab. it's waiting to go for a good 30-day cycle on the moon where it starts to eat and fill out, and that crab becomes a full crab again.
Wow.
But that's the general process.
Now, it seems that that whole process can be a little labor-intensive, and certainly there's a lot of watching and nurturing that's happening during this process because, from what I understand, the crabs also at this point cannibalistic. So, I mean, they can go after each other. And is that true that the hard shells can consume the soft shells if you let them get to each other?
Exactly. And what happens if you that keen eye, remember we said we do it with color.
Right.
If that color is off and that crab isn't quite ready to get into the pre-molt stage where he stops eating, he will go after the crabs that are molting. So what we try to do is that it's a continual process of segregating. We have different pens. We bring them out, and we identify, and we also extract. If you got one that's not where it needs to be, we'll remove it and put it into the incubator, which is away from the crabs that are going to molt, because they'll go after those crabs as soon as they molt, because crabs like them just like we like them.
Right. Well, it's amazing that that customers often wonder why the cost of a soft shell crab is fairly expensive, and you know when they see a Frank Randall crab on the plate that kind of fills a 12-inch plate from end to end, often stuffed with crab meat or something else inside of it, they understand that there's something special going on. But I don't think the public in general realize what it takes to get to that point of bringing a crab to the marketplace and bringing it to the marketplace in the fashion of quality and size that that chefs like ourselves really search out. And there's very few people, I think, in the marketplace like Randall's who can guarantee that type of a crab to us most of the time.
It's not only labor intense, but it's knowledge of the process. We segregate these products as they come through the process, and once they get to a certain point, we actually... it's almost like corn feeding beef. You take these and you put them area, but what we feed them is water. This oxygen, super oxygenated, but there's nothing but water spraying into water, creating more oxygen, and that crab has that flow. And it's sort of like what you see on the tide chains, the full moon and everything. We can sort of duplicate that with just the way we spray water into these tanks and pin these crabs by themselves so they can mature without anything nicking them. Because one nick on a crab that crab will start to bleed. It bleeds clear, but it weakens it. It doesn't reach its full potential.
Well, Frank, if you don't mind, we're going to take a quick break, and if you don't mind, we'll keep you over for a couple of minutes to ask a few more questions, and then we'll let you go back to work, okay?
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. Y'all will be back in a second.
I'll spend the day with you. There is drizzle and fog in the air. Not for now, soon we'll be there. And I'll show you how special this place is to me.
Hi, this is Cheryl Castile. Join me each week on The Exchange for conversations with musicians, artists, dancers and writers, poets and actors, and everything else in between. Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 3 a.m. here on listener-supported public radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Dirty Rice on the air every Saturday evening from 8:30 to 10 p.m. Join either Mr. Lee Klein, Peter, or myself, Bill Bolins, for a program of great Louisiana music. That's Dirty Rice, Saturday nights, 8:30 to 10, with a rebroadcast at noon on Wednesday, right here on KRVS 88.7 FM and on the internet at krvs.org.
Pour la meilleure musique, cajun, créole et français, écoutez-moi en onctueux avec le bal du dimanche après-midi. Chaque dimanche, à midi jusqu'à 3 heures, droit du site KRVS, Radio Acadie, Lafayette et Lac Charles.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles. Online at krvs.org.
Sailors love to sail the seas and wear that battle fair. They love to feel the ocean breeze and sniff the salty air. They love to laugh, they love to work, they love to eat good food.
This is your captain speaking. Cut out that singing. Get back to work.
They love to sing you this fine song when you're in a terrible mood. Hey, what a crab and a hoe, what a crab. Hey, what a crab and a hoe, what a crab. Hey, what a, hey, what a, hey, what a crab. Hey, oh crab, crabby, ho, oh, oh crab.
I don't have a clue where you got that from, Slama. I mean, that was pretty.
It's a classic.
It is after just now, that's for sure.
It's way back, yeah.
go way back for sure. Anyway, y'all, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. We appreciate you being with us today. I know there's a lot of options for you guys out there, and you take the time to join us around the kitchen table, and we appreciate it so much. We're talking with my good friend, restaurateur, and of course, authority on so many different seafoods, Frank Randall of Randall's in Lafayette, Louisiana. If you hadn't been to Randall's, you need to go to Randall's because it's one of the finest places and a great, great food, great fun, and also at the same time a guy very knowledgeable and certainly involved in so much of the great things all Louisiana. So we have Frank with us. Michelle, you had a question that you wanted to
ask. Well, I was just wondering, you know, certainly catching crabs is regulated, but is catching soft shell crabs regulated as well, Frank?
Not as much as we'd like to see it, but that part of the catch is segregated. You're able to pull it apart and actually harvest a smaller crab than normal. It's called pre-molt. We would like to see that crab get a little bit larger. It would be helpful because then it would allow it to go through at least one cycle where it could, primarily the female crabs could have eggs. And realistically, we would like to see that lower line or a margin be over 5 inches on a crab to allow this crab to have one cycle of laying eggs itself before it goes into the pre-molt. They'd be harvested before they had, you know, we just need to try to have that extra just volume of crabs.
Just to sustain, to sustain the...
Correct, sustain it.
Because the eggs also are important in so much of the, like the she crab soups that people are making now. So not only do we all want the soft shell crab, we also want the crab eggs, we want the crab meat, my God. Is that sustaining the price of crabs, the desire by customers, the desire by the public to want more and more crabs? Is that sustaining the industry, keeping the price up? What's some of the challenges you're seeing right now?
You'll have differing views. There's a guy, Billy Broussard, who's real active in wildlife and fisheries. He's a fisherman out of Pecan Island, and he's got it right. He understands the importance of the full cycle. I think after 42 years, I would sort of lean towards Billy's analysis that, you know, we need to give it a little bit of a rest and allow these crabs to produce the cycle of crabs before they're actually put into the pre-molt and go to the soft shell, which means raising the limit to 5.5 inches before you can catch them.
Now, one last question, and then I'll let you go, Michelle. I want to know his favorite crab recipe, because, I mean, he's the crab guru, right?
So, he's doing crabs for us next week.
I know he's doing
We're going seeing, because we're working on LPB, on the Taste of Louisiana series, and Frank's going to...
So, Frank, are you creating a special dish for this national TV show for me? Are you thinking about it yet, or are you just saying, I'm not even worried about it till you get here? Which one is it?
Maybe. Come on, John. You know how we are. You can't do that stuff. You got to hold it close to our chest, man. I'll tell you too soon. I got to keep
it suspense. Well, let me tell all of our listeners here, you're hearing the voice of not only a real fantastic entrepreneur, but somebody who loves Louisiana, somebody who promotes Louisiana at every turn, but somebody who is legitimate in the seafood business. And the quality that Randall's really exhibits to us as chefs out there is just unmatched, I think, in the marketplace, especially when it comes to the availability of soft shell crab. And I really shouldn't be saying this, Michelle, because that might kind of shorten my market. You know what I mean? But Frank, we look forward to seeing you next week or so. And thanks so much for being with us on the show today. We appreciate you so much.
We appreciate you. Thanks for all your good work, Michelle.
Thank you, Frank. Good to talk with you and good to see you next week. Can't wait.
All right. I can't wait to see what you're cooking for me, Frank.
Maybe they want some roulette. Let the good times roll, buddy. We're going to do it.
Thank you, Frank. All right, everybody. Frank Randall. You can't meet a nicer guy than that. And his wife, too. Beautiful. Beautiful girl. She's just fantastic. Yeah. So anyway, y'all, you're going to hear more about him. In fact, you'll see more of Frank on our PBS series as well. So, Michelle, what about books on the subject? Do we have anything that you found?
Yes, indeedy. The first book I want to recommend is the Louisiana Seafood Bible, dedicated to crabs. And, of course, you have that whole series. This was written by Gerald and Glenda Horst, the husband and wife team. They've done a series on Louisiana seafood. They've covered crabs. They've covered oysters, crawfish, shrimp.
Great, great, great books. Yeah,
they're
great books.
They're comprehensive. Great look at each one of the industries in Louisiana. And the second half of the books are dedicated to a collection of delicious recipes. So this one using blue crab meat. Once you have your catch, you can absolutely go wild in this section of the book. Crab Louie, crab and shrimp stew, gumbo, your recipe for she crab soup. So it's a great book. The second book I'd like to recommend is called Walking Sideways. This was written by Judith Weiss. And what a great book for all those interested in the 7,000 species of this amazing crustacean. Judith gives us a really good tour of the world of crabs, their unique biology, habitats, reproduction, natural history. As a professor of biological sciences at Rutgers and former president of the American Institute of Biological Sciences, she really impressed upon us the urgent need to conserve the marine environment and its inhabitants. So something that we should all be aware of, particularly here in Louisiana. But they're both great books. Highly recommend them. The Louisiana Seafood Bible on Crabs by Gerald and Glenda Horst. And then, of course, Walking Sideways by Judith Weiss.
Well, I think Frank made a great, great point just talking about the sushi market, because to have these little small soft shell crab that fit right inside of a sushi roll, or to put two or three of them right inside of a po' boy bun. I mean, we try to, in our soft shell crab po' boys in the restaurant, we try to have one large crab in a 6-inch, so at least we let the crabs grow to their full maturity. But if you're taking little bitty 3- and 4-inch crabs and putting them in I could see where that would be concerning to the fishermen. So, yeah, hopefully we will have some. We normally hate to think about regulation, but to regulate things that make perfect sense, to wait for a crab to get five inches, which puts it through a reproduction cycle, and from the solid to the sook, as they call it. The sook is the crab. The silly is the immature crab. And then the sook is a crab that has molted and now is able to reproduce. And, of course, to get those couple cycles of laying eggs and getting the crabs back into the wild is so important. So we certainly understand that really well. So, Frank made some good points there. Slama, what about our Facebook? You know, we've been, I was in Norway a while back. And
oh, really?
And I just posted so many great pictures and everything. I wonder if any of them made it to...
pictures in Norway? Yeah. We need to get those up there.
Oh, yeah. No, I sent a bunch of them in. So what do you have showing on yours, Sam?
So right now, we're just keeping people posted with updates about the upcoming shows and the past shows. We're constantly working on our jfolse.com website that we encourage our listeners to come on by. That's where we have all our guests and goodies information. We've got information about how you can contact our guests. You can check out some books that we talk about that Miss Michelle just mentioned. We always post those to our jfolse.com page.
I'm seeing my boy Hubble, you know. David Hubble is probably the most active guy on Facebook I know.
That you know.
he and Andre Email. Now, these are two names that I know right off the tip of my tongue here, because if I put something on Facebook, within 1 minute, both of them will answer, I don't care where I am in the world.
They're ready for it.
And they're very, very active in it. Yeah.
Bubbling with information.
And he is bubbling with information. I'd just love to see some of the things he posts. Anyway, y'all, that's our Facebook.com, Stirring It Up, STIRRIN It Up Radio. So you want to go there and let us know what you think about it. Let us know what you want to hear about. Let us know if you have an idea for a show. Let us know if there's some interesting thing we should be talking about that we're not talking about. We're always interested in hearing that. Michelle, what about, are you ready for a recipe here?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Now, I have a couple of choices here, Slama. I have my soft-shell crab sautéed in garlic butter.
Which sounds fabulous.
Oh, it's pretty good. I have my beer battered soft shell crab.
Uh-oh, look out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have options. I have my broiled soft shell crab, which was a big, big thing in early New Orleans restaurants. My she crab soup, of course, I have. But what about my soft shell crab sauteed in garlic butter?
I think that sounds great.
Does that sound good to y'all?
Let me ask you this. Is it very difficult to handle soft shell crabs? I've never cooked a soft shell crab. You know, you kind of hate to mess it up. You know, it's a delicacy, and it's kind of intimidating.
Well, you want to remember, most of the soft-shell crab you have, even live, will not be a crab that can bite you or anything else, because they're soft-shell, and their claws aren't hard yet. Mm-hmm. And so, but most of the time, you're going to get soft-shell crab, they'll be frozen or at least refrigerated and packed to a point where they're easy to work with. They're not going to be moving around or trying to walk around. I mean, that's not what you're going to find in a soft-shell crab.
And I'm not worried about that. I'm just worried about messing it up in the pan.
Whenever you mess up anything of high quality, like a soft-shell crab, we call that a creation.
Uh-huh.
We've just recreated
a new recipe.
It's a new recipe. Some of the greatest recipes in the world are created by messing up something. And all of a sudden they say, wow, that's pretty good. That's bad. And I was thinking about doing this. So just remember that there's no messing up a soft-shell crab. You're going to create a new recipe.
Okay.
Even if you burn it, Paul Prudhomme did that. Black and Redfish.
My
God, he made millions of dollars. But most famous chef in America. I love Paul. I wish I'd have messed it up. Anyway, y'all, you want to remember, and you heard Frank just now, Frank supplies me with what we call whalers, and whalers is the largest of the soft shell crabs, normally 6 inches point to point, gigantic crabs. And when you know how to handle them like Frank does, you heard him say he waits one day where they're sucking in that water and they're full as full can be, because then if you let them pass that, they'll start to shrink down in size and try to put all the energy into hardening that shell. And so he knows exactly how to pick a crab to bring to us. And I use the whaler size, and you don't want to overcrowd the crabs in a pan while sautéing either. You want to make sure that you give them a lot of room to swim, so to speak. And also preheat your oven to keep the cooked sautéed crabs warm once they prepare. So, Michelle, I'm going to start with 8 whalers.
Okay.
This is only to serve 4 people.
Now, do I have to do anything to clean it, or when I buy it, it's already ready?
No. You have to clean them. But cleaning a soft-shell crab is so easy to do because in order for a crab to go soft-shell, it stops eating. Mm-hmm. It moves into the real nice, clean, grassy area, and water must be rushing through that area to assist the crab in pushing the shell off of it. So all of nature is working toward us as cooks, as crabs are going soft shell as well. The crabs are not eating, so that means it cleans out the system. Second of all, they're in clean rushing water, which means that the whole system is spotless at that point because it helps to clean the crab out. And they're segregated from the rest of the herd, so to speak, because crabs are cannibalistic at that point as well. So when a crab goes soft shell, everybody's trying to eat it, so it's trying to protect itself by hiding out and not moving very much. So to clean a soft shell crab, I pick up the two pointed ends of the shell, and using a little paring knife, I lift that little point up and I kind of separate the shell from the body in about a 2-inch little cut right there. And I lift that up and I remove the gills, those little, you know, those little gills right under there. Yeah. It's right on top of the meat. And right under the gills is a little bitty air sac. It's about the size of a pea, maybe a little green pea or butter bean or something like that. And I put the point of my knife there and I just pull it out because not that most people do. Most people eat it, but it just has a little chewy texture to it. So I remove that little ball that's right under that section of the gills right there. You can see it very easily. I also take my knife and I remove the eyes and the mouth of the crab as well as the apron on the underside, as we were talking about. That kind of cleans all the things off of the crab. And it's easy to just take your paring knife and kind of remove the eyes and lift that all that little, kind of those little feelers and everything right above the mouth. Very easy to clean, though. In a large bowl, I put milk. And season that milk lightly with salt and pepper. And I'm talking about, somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe a cup of milk. I'm going to add to that some salt, pepper, granulated garlic. I'm going to get all of that nice. And then I'm going to go ahead and season some flour, about 3 cups of flour. I'm going to season with salt, pepper as well. And into my saute pan, I'm going to put about 1/2 cup of clarified butter. You can just put regular butter if you want to. And I want to get that butter almost at a point where I'm starting to see a little browning around the edge, but not smoking. You're going to burn your butter. I dip the crab into that into the milk and then into the seasoned flour. I shake off all of the excess and lay them on the side until I throw my garlic into that butter. Once I see that little brown, I'll throw some my garlic. And I have about 8 cloves of garlic thinly sliced. Mm. And I have, as I said just now, about 1/2 cup of that melted butter. And I just allow the garlic to infuse the butter. And once I get up just a minute or so, then I take the crabs, Michelle, and I put them apron side down in the butter. Mm-hmm. And I don't crowd it. 2 crabs in a skillet is plenty. And I saute them a couple of minutes, and then I turn them over to shell down, and I cook it for a couple of minutes. So about two minutes on each side. Put them on a cookie sheet into a 350-degree oven, and I hold them there until the rest of the crabs are cooked. And the crabs will just be kind of simmering away there, cooking all the way through. Very easy recipe, y'all. It's going to be on the website. My soft-shell crab sauteed in garlic butter along with 5 or 6 other great recipes. So just go there and get them. They're all free of charge, and nothing's better. That's my favorite recipe, by the way, the garlic butter sauteed crabs. Anyway, y'all, eat and enjoy Louisiana seafood. There's nothing better, especially this time of year. So take advantage of things in season and regional. So we'll see you next week.
Glamorous radio stars, ambitious politicians, and sly sambistas. Join me for Samba at the Dawn of Modern Brazil as we travel back to 1930s Rio and find out how samba became the sound of a nation. Next time, on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi, everyone. This is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we'll hear from Jimbo Mathis and the Leland Sundries. That plus our feature host, Robert Gordon, will continue his look at the history of high records. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Tonight at 11 on KRVS.
Gamut of styles of music on Harpistry this week, from jazz to classical to the santours of Egypt and India and the Egyptian Kanun. Catch it Sunday at midnight and Monday at noon right here on KRVS.
Regional Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS-FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Rendez-vous de Cajun en direct du Théâtre Liberté à Eunice est rendu possible par Le Best Stop au Scott. Rendez-vous de Cajun live from the Liberty Theatre in Eunice is made possible.